Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Family Jensen, number 3, The Violent Land, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Thomas Penny, Thomas Keegan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Carlin, Tim Getman, Drew Kopas, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Nora Ashrati, Nick DePinto, Eric Mesner, Stephen Carpenter, Evan Casey, David Harris, Colleen Delaney, Michael John Casey, Danny Gavigan, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, and Christopher Graybill. As he rode into the town of Big Rock, Colorado, from his own Sugarloaf Ranch, Smoke Jensen looked forward to reuniting with his friends, Matt and Preacher. Sometimes it seemed that Smoke had known the old mountain man called Preacher his entire life. It was hard to remember that he had been 16 years old when he and his pa first ran into Preacher, not long after the Civil War. Preacher was lean, leathery, and white-haired even then, and he didn't seem to have aged a day in the years since. It was Preacher who had first called him Smoke after seeing young Kirby Jensen handle a gun. He was so fast that Preacher claimed the sight of his draw was as elusive as smoke. Preacher had predicted then that Smoke would become one of the fastest men with a gun the frontier had ever known. And he was right. Smoke was one of just a handful of men who had overcome his reputation as a gunfighter and built a respectable life for himself. No doubt, marrying the beautiful schoolteacher Sally Reynolds, whom he'd met when he was living the life of a wanted outlaw under the name Buck West, had a whole lot to do with that. So had establishing the fine spread known as Sugarloaf and settling down to become a cattleman. Despite that, trouble still had a way of finding Smoke. He had to use his gun more often than he liked, but he hadn't been raised to run away from a challenge. And anybody who thought that Smoke Jensen wasn't dangerous anymore would be in for an abrupt and perhaps fatal awakening if they threatened him or those he loved. Preacher wasn't the only visitor headed for Big Rock. He and Matt Jensen had agreed to meet in Denver and come on to the settlement together. Now, much in the same way that Preacher was Smoke's adopted father, Matt was his adopted brother, although there was nothing official about it in either case. Smoke had taken Matt under his wing when the youngster was still a boy, the only survivor from a family murdered by outlaws. With Preacher's help, Smoke had raised Matt into a fine young man who took the Jensen name when he set out on his own. Although still relatively young in years, Matt had gained a wealth of experience, both while he was still with Smoke and afterward. He'd already drifted over much of the frontier and had worked as a deputy, a shotgun guard, and a scout. He had tangled with outlaws, renegade Indians, and bad men of every stripe. Smoke hoped nothing like that would interfere with this visit from Preacher and Matt. It'd be nice to get together with his family without a bunch of gunplay in danger. As he rode past the line of shops, Smoke spotted his old friend Sheriff Monty Carson walking down the street, and he rode over to him. Carson paused as Smoke reined in next to him.
Hey, Smoke, to what do we owe the pleasure of this visit?
Oh, I'm just meeting up with some folks for a little family reunion.
Matt and Preacher are coming here?
That's right. In fact, they should be riding in today, according to the letter I got from Matt.
I'll be glad to see him again. Good Lord, Preacher must be 100 years old by now.
He's not quite that long in the tooth yet. Heck, he's never looked or acted as old as he is. I reckon he'll slow down one of these days, but the last time I saw him, he seemed as spry as ever.
When are Matt and Preacher supposed to get here?
I don't know for sure, but I figure they'll be moseying along. Preacher doesn't get in a hurry unless there's a good reason to. I thought I'd go over to the cafe, get something to eat, then find something to occupy my time while I'm waiting for him.
Come on by the office. We'll have us a game of dominoes.
Smoke twisted in the saddle to search for the source of the shots. Hearing them coming from the direction of the bank, Smoke then spotted the 7 horses tied at the bank's hitch rack.
Could be a robbery.
The presence of a stranger standing next to those horses, a tall, lean Indian in a black hat, sure seemed to support the robbery theory. The fact that the Indian jerked a rifle to his shoulder and pointed it right at Monte Carson confirmed it. Smoke's Colt appeared in his hand as if by magic. He felled the would-be assailant. His animal shied and bumped into the other horses, making them skittish too. All 7 mounts started jerking at their reins, trying to get loose and bolt. Monty drew his gun and broke into a run toward the bank. But Smoke continued down the street astride his horse. Smoke arrived in front of the bank just as several men burst out through the doors. The strangers were all carrying guns. The one in the lead saw Smoke. Smoke ducked and snapped a shot at the man. The slug caught the bank robber in the shoulder and drove him halfway around. He stayed on his feet, though. One of the other men bowled forward and swung up a sawed-off greener. Smoke saw the scatter gun. Smoke landed in the street, rolled over, and came up on one knee. He had to throw himself to the side in order to avoid being trampled. From the corner of his eye, Smoke caught a glimpse of Monte Carson kneeling behind a rain barrel and firing at the outlaws.
Oh, no!
One of the bank robbers clutched at his middle and folded up as one of Monte's bullets punched into his belly. Smoke fired again and saw one of the outlaws go spinning off his feet as the bullet tore through his thigh. Smoke shifted his aim and fired his last shot. It went into the chest of the man whose shoulder he had broken earlier. The man dropped his revolver and pitched off the boardwalk to land face down in the street. That left 2 of the outlaws on their feet, including the man with the sawed off. He had broken the weapon open and was trying frantically to thumb more shells into it. The remaining outlaw had a canvas bag clutched in his left hand and a Colt in his right. The remaining outlaw attempted a parting volley, causing Smoke to dive forward onto his belly to avoid the shots. Smoke looked up. The outlaw was trying to swing up on a horse. Smoke surged up onto his feet and jammed his empty Colt back in its holster as he went after the man trying to escape. With a diving tackle, he crashed into the outlaw and drove him away from the horse. They both hit the ground. The bank robber lashed out at Smoke, who avoided the first blow, but then caught a knobby fist on the jaw. Smoke threw a punch of his own right into the fella's breadbasket. The man tried to lift his knee into Smoke's groin, but Smoke twisted aside and took the blow on his thigh. Smoke landed a punch to the outlaw's nose. The man arched his back and threw Smoke off. As Smoke rolled away, the outlaw grabbed up the gun he had dropped and aimed it at Smoke. Then the man crumpled. Smoke glanced over and saw Monte Carson lowering his revolver after firing the shot that had probably saved Smoke's life. But that still left the shotgunner, who snapped his weapon closed again and now swung it towards Smoke and Monte.
You damn meddling sons of bitches! Yeah!
The outlaw had not so much as jerked the triggers when his head exploded. Smoke didn't know what to make of it until he looked and saw two men sitting on horseback a couple of blocks away. The lean, white-bearded figure in buckskins and a broad-brimmed felt hat lowered a Sharp's carbine. A tendril of powder smoke curled up from the barrel. The old-timer hitched his horse forward and rode up to Smoke. You just cannot stay out of trouble for any time at all, can you, boy?
Preacher, you sure have good timing.
I always have. Might have showed up a few minutes earlier, though, since you only left one of the varmints for me to kill. I heard the shots as we was riding in. Sounded like a ride smart fracas. How come you's killing them?
They tried to rob the bank.
Yeah, I thought it might have been something like that when I saw them greenbacks scattered around. Preacher's companion galloped up. Matt swung a fist that crashed into the jaw of the lone surviving outlaw, who'd pulled himself up onto his knees and was trying to lift his gun. The young Al Hoot went over backwards, knocked cold by the powerful blow.
While you two were flapping your gums, that varmint was about to shoot Preacher in the back.
Oh, no, he wouldn't, Matt. I figured you'd take care of him.
What if I hadn't been paying attention?
Well, I knew you would be. Smoke and meat taught you well enough.
Well, I suppose that's true.
Matt was the tallest of the three men. A fair-haired, handsome youngster in a black Stetson and a faded blue bib-front shirt. Big Rock Sheriff walked up as Smoke thumbed fresh cartridges into his Colt.
We're much obliged to both of you for your help, aren't we, Monty?
We sure are. I better check on the rest of those varmints and make sure they're all dead. Gonna be wounded in the bank and need tending to as well, I'll bet.
Why don't you go see about helping those folks? Preacher and Matt and I will take care of the chores out here.
Thanks.
While Monty hurried into the ominously quiet bank, Smoke and Matt went quickly from body to body, checking for signs of life. The young outlaw Matt had knocked out was the only one of the bank robbers still alive. He was wounded in the left leg and had lost quite a bit of blood, but he would probably live. Smoke rolled the unconscious outlaw onto his belly, pulled the man's arms behind his back, and used the outlaw's own belt to lash his wrists together for the time being. Dr. Hiram Simpson, the local Sawbones, came running from his office and joined several other townspeople in crowding into the bank to see what they could do to help. Monty Carson emerged from the building a few minutes later, his features pale and drawn.
It's pretty bad in there. Jasper Davenport, who just took over running the bank, is dead. Didn't even make it in the job for a month before those blasted outlaws gunned him down. Mitchell Bird's dead, too, and Elaine Harris is wounded. Got a dead outlaw in there with most of his face shot off. I reckon that's probably what started the battle. Appears that Mitch got his hands on a gun and shot the desperado.
Does it look like Miss Harris will make it?
The doc didn't say.
Well, when he's through in there, this fella here is going to need some attention. Matt and I can go ahead and haul him over to the jail for you if you want, though.
Well, that'd sure be giving me a hand. I'm obliged to you boys.
Get his feet, Matt.
Smoke and Matt didn't have any trouble lifting the bank robber and toting him down the street to the sturdy building that housed both Monty Carson's office and Big Rock's jail. All the cells were empty at the moment, so they carried the man into the one closest to the cell block door and placed him on the bunk. As soon as they had stepped out, Monty swung the barred door shut, closing solidly. Preacher had followed him into the sheriff's office.
Beats me why you don't just let that rapscallion bleed to death. Saves the bother and expense of a trial and a hanging.
That's not the way the law works, Preacher. It's mighty good to see you again, by the way. You too, Matt.
It's good to be here. It's been too long since the three of us have gotten together.
You fellas want some coffee?
No, but thank you. I figure we'll go over to the cafe and have some lunch before we head out to Sugarloaf. Were you able to find out what happened inside the bank, Monty?
There were a couple of customers who didn't get hit when the bullets started flying, and the other teller, Fred Reeves, is all right, too. They all hit the dirt, or the floor, rather, when the shooting started. Seems like the outlaw was still inside the bank and tried to paw Mrs. Harris. Now, Mitch Bird had a Colt Lightning on the shelf under his counter. He grabbed it and shot the Owl Hoot, but that set the others off. I reckon it's only pure luck that it wasn't an even bigger massacre in there.
It's too bad we weren't able to save more of the citizens. But at least the gang didn't get away.
Do you recognize any of the bank robbers, Monty?
A couple of them look familiar to me. I must have seen their pictures on Reward Dodgers. I got a big pile of those posters in my desk. I'll go through them later and see if I can match up any names with the faces. Could be you and Preacher have some rewards coming, Smoke.
Oh, I don't care about no diddly-dang reward. I've had fortunes come and go through my fingers so many times over the year, money don't mean nothing to me. Long as I've got enough for a meal and a snort of whiskey now and then.
And Sugarloaf's doing just fine, turning a profit every year. And I expect that to keep up as long as we don't have a bad drought. Maybe Matt should claim the rewards.
Me? I didn't do anything except wallop one of them.
Those wanted posters all say dead or alive. You ought to at least get paid for the one you laid out, Matt. I'll look into it.
All right. But I didn't do it for the money. I was just trying to save Preacher's scrawny old hide.
Now, I told you, I knowed he was back there.
Come on, let's get something to eat, and then we'll head to the ranch.
They were about to leave the sheriff's office when Dr. Simpson came in.
How's Miss Harris doing, Doc?
I think there's a good chance she'll pull through. She was wounded in the arm and the hip. The arm wound should heal cleanly, but the injury to her hip may result in her having a permanent limp. It's too soon to say. She's been taken down to my house, and my nurse is looking after her. I was told you have a wounded prisoner here, Sheriff.
Sure do. I'll take you back to his cell. See you later, boys.
Sheriff Carson must be having trouble with his eyes if he called you a boy, Preacher.
Yeah, I reckon so, since he didn't notice you was a snot-nosed, wet-behind-the-ears kid neither.
Come on, you two. You can continue this squabble after lunch.
They headed over to the cafe. The cafe was doing a brisk business since it was the middle of the day. Most of the people in there were talking about the attempted bank robbery and the resulting shootout.
How's Sally doing?
She's fine. Anxious to see you fellas again, I expect.
How about them hands of yourn?
Cal and Pearly, as quarrelsome as ever. They wouldn't know what to do if they weren't squabbling.
We saw something interesting while we were riding up here. Do you know there's a wagon train headed in this direction, Smoke?
This is the first I've heard of it.
I ran across dozens of wagon trains when I was a younger man. Traveled with a few of them, too. Them pilgrims wasn't always the smartest folks when it came to getting along on the frontier, but they was determined to build new lives for themselves. I'll give them that much. Shoot, I guess everybody was a greenhorn once.
But you didn't like all the immigrants who moved west. You said they civilized places too much and changed everything from the way it was back in the shining times.
Yeah, well, now that's true. They did. And I ain't over fond of that so-called civilization they brung with them. But you can't stop things from changing. It'll happen when you ain't even looking.
You didn't talk to the people with the wagon train, did you?
No, we just waved at them and went on our way.
Why do you ask, Smoke?
I was just curious where they're bound, that's all. I'm not aware of any land around here being opened recently for settlement.
I wouldn't worry about that wagon train. Chances are it's headed somewhere north of here. Wyoming, maybe, or even Montana.
Yeah, you're probably right.
With snow-capped mountains looming nearby, rolling hills covered with pines, valleys dotted with aspens, and broad grassy meadows next to icy, spring-fed, fast-flowing streams, the ranch called Sugarloaf was the prettiest place Smoke Jensen had ever seen. Every day of his life, he counted himself lucky to live here. Of course, the fact that he lived here with a beautiful, intelligent, courageous, and loving woman probably had something to do with it. Sally Jensen was a school teacher by training. That was her job when Smoke met her in Idaho. She'd given up teaching when she married Smoke and they established the ranch in Colorado, except for brief stints, filling in whenever the school in Big Rock didn't have a regular teacher. Sally didn't miss it. Her marriage to Smoke and their life together on the ranch filled her days quite satisfactorily. She did enjoy having company, though. She was standing on the porch when Smoke, Matt, and Preacher rode up later that afternoon. By the time Smoke dismounted, Sally had come down the steps. She put a hand on her husband's arm in greeting. Then she hugged the old mountain man.
Preacher, it is so good to see you again.
Well, it is mighty good to be here.
I'm glad the two of you were able to make it here today. I have a big supper planned.
I'm glad they got here when they did, too. I reckon Preacher probably saved my life. Again.
Smoke, what in the world happened? Was there some sort of trouble in town?
I'm afraid so. A gang of owl hoots tried to rob the bank. The bank president was killed, along with Mitch Bird, one of the tellers. And Elaine Harris was wounded in the shooting as well.
Oh, no, that's terrible, Smoke. How badly is Mrs. Harris hurt? Is she going to be all right?
Doc Simpson thinks she'll live, but she may never be 100% again.
Oh, that poor woman. I'll have to take the buckboard and go into town tomorrow to visit her. And to pay my respects to Mr. Bird's wife, of course. I didn't know the new bank president very well.
Well, he and his wife hadn't been in town for long.
What about the outlaws? What became of them?
One of them's locked up in Monty's jail with a bullet hole in his leg. The rest of them are at the Undertaker's, I reckon. I don't think there's been time to plant them yet.
Good. I suppose you two were in the middle of the ruckus, too?
We got there just as it was ending.
Yeah, just in time for me to blow the head off of one of the varmints.
Fellow was about to set off both barrels of a sawed-off shotgun at Smoke and Sheriff Carson.
Is Monty all right?
He's fine. The trouble's over.
Well, I'm sorry about the townspeople who died, but I'm sure it would have been a lot worse if you hadn't been there. Let's try to think about more pleasant things instead. If you men want to sit out here on the porch and enjoy what's left of the afternoon, I'll bring out a pitcher of lemonade.
That sounds mighty nice, Sally Gal.
We'll do that as soon as we've tended to the horses.
While they were taking care of their mounts, Pearly rode in. Sugarloaf's foreman was a tall, lanky cowboy with a drooping mustache.
Mighty fine to see you fellas again. Been too long since you visited.
We feel the same way.
Where's Cal?
I sent him over to check that east pasture along Snake Creek. Saw some wolf sign over there a day or two ago, so I figured it'd be a good idea to keep a closer eye on the stock. If we start losing many cows, we'll have to get up a hunt.
After Pearly had unsaddled his mount and turned the horse into the corral with the others, the four men walked toward the house, where Sally was setting a tray of lemonade and three glasses on a small table on the porch, next to several rocking chairs.
I didn't know you'd come in, Pearly. I'll fetch another glass.
Not much obliged, Miss Sally.
What was that?
Sally looked toward the east, just like the four men were doing. The shot had come from quite a distance away, but it sounded like it was in that direction.
Cal's over yonder.
Yeah, there was only the one shot. If he was in trouble, he would have fired more than that. Chances are he spotted one of those dang lobos, took a shot at it.
I think you're right. We'll go ahead and have our lemonade. Cal's more than capable of handling himself.
But despite the confidence he felt in the young cowboy, Smoke caught himself glancing off to the east as he sat there with the others and sipped lemonade. He would be mighty glad when Cal came riding in, just so he could be sure that the youngster was all right. Cal was still on his mind when Smoke spotted two riders coming toward the ranch headquarters. The fact that they were riding single file down a distant hill gave Smoke his first clue as to what was going on. As the riders came closer, he was able to tell that the second man held a rifle. That confirmed Smoke's hunch. Somebody was bringing in a prisoner. And considering the direction the riders were coming from, it was likely that one of them was Cal. But the question remained, was Cal the captor in this situation, or the captive?
Riders coming.
Yeah.
I think one of them's Cal.
Supper will be ready. What's wrong?
There are a couple of men riding in. One of them is holding a gun on the other. I figure Cal is one of them, but we don't know if he's the one in trouble. Why don't you go back inside, Sally?
I'll go back inside, all right, to fetch my Winchester.
That's not necessary. There are four of us and only two of them at most. We got them outnumbered.
Don't let anything happen to Calvin.
We won't.
By the time the riders came close enough for the men on the porch to make out who was who, Sally had gone back into the house and all four men were waiting tensely at the railing. Smoke felt a wave of relief go through him as he recognized Cal riding behind the other man, who was a stranger. Cal had his rifle pointed in the general direction of the hombre's back. A smile broke across Cal's face as he saw Matt and Preacher standing on the porch.
Howdy, fellas. Smoke told us you were supposed to show up today. I'm glad you did.
Good to see you too, Yunker. What in the Sam Hill is that you got there?
I'm not quite sure. He's some sort of foreigner, and he claims he comes from a wagon train.
Told you we saw a wagon train.
You sure did.
As Smoke approached the two newcomers, he saw that the stranger was young, probably only a few years older than Cal. He had dark blonde hair and a face that might have been friendly if it wasn't so damn nervous. The big hat and fringed shirt made him look like the drugstore cowboy Smoke had seen back east, hanging around Wild West shows.
Why are you pointing a rifle at him, Cal?
I caught him driving some of our stock out of the pasture over by Snake Creek. I thought he was a rustler, so I got the drop on him. He slapped leather anyway, and I had to put a warning shot over his head. His horse threw him, made him drop his gun. That's about the size of it. Oh yeah, he says his name is Dieter.
Dieter Schumann. I sincerely apologize for causing a ruckus.
You're Prussian, aren't you?
Yeah. Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Just enough to know you asked me if I'd speak your native lingo, and I'm afraid I don't.
Ah, no matter. I speak very fine English. You are the man who owns this ranch?
That's right. Smoke Jensen's my name.
I am honored to meet you, Herr Jensen. May I dismount?
You've got his gun?
Right here, Smoke. I didn't search him, though. He might have a hideout gun.
I assure you, I am unarmed.
Light and set, then. We believe in hospitality here in Sugarloaf, but we believe in being careful, too. So don't get any ideas. I think you can put your rifle away, Cal. Why don't you go tend to your horse and Dieter's too, if you don't mind?
Cal slid his Winchester back into its saddle boot.
Sure, Smoke.
Cal held out his hand, and Dieter gave him the buckskin's reins. Cal headed for the barn and the corral, leading the visitor's horse. Sally came out onto the porch, carrying another glass. Obviously, she'd been listening to the conversation from just inside the door.
There's a little lemonade left if you like some, Mr. Schumann.
Dieter snatched his hat off and bowed from the waist.
That sounds wonderful, Fraulein.
It's Frau. I'm Mrs. Jensen, Smoke's wife.
It is an honor and a pleasure.
Hey, don't get any ideas about kissing the back of her hand. She's a spunky sort. She's liable to punch you if you do.
Oh, don't listen to him, Mr. Schumann. Visitors are always welcome on Sugarloaf, if they're not looking for trouble.
Oh, such an idea is the farthest thing from my intention, I assure you.
Dieter came up onto the porch. Smoke and the others watched him closely, but he appeared as harmless as he claimed to be. Sally poured the last of the lemonade for Dieter.
Oh, back off and let the poor man breathe. Here you are, Mr. Schumann.
I'm much obliged, ma'am.
Dieter took a long swallow of the cool, tart liquid.
Oh, that's larrapin good.
Where'd you say you were from?
Germany. Prussia, to be precise.
What's this about a wagon train?
Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann is our leader. He's taking a large group of settlers to the American states called Wyoming. The Baron has bought a ranch there and intends to establish a town as well.
Sounds like a fellow with big plans.
Oh, yes, very much so. He intends to be another sort of baron as well. A cattle baron.
Where are these wagons now?
Coming up the trail that runs east of the mountains. It curves through these hills on its way north.
That's right, but we've never had a wagon train come through here before. The ones bound for Wyoming, Idaho, and Oregon usually take a more northerly route across Kansas and Nebraska. Your wagon master shouldn't have brought you this far south. Nothing wrong with the trail, but it's a longer way around. It'll take you at least a couple weeks longer than it would have if you'd gone the other way.
My apologies, Herr Jensen. The Baron did not engage the services of a guide or wagon master. He said that he has visited America enough times and is familiar enough with the western frontier that he could lead us and determine our route himself.
Oh, a greenhorn know-it-all, Ferner.
Them's fighting words.
Take it easy. Preacher doesn't mean anything by it. That's what this old mossy horn is called, by the way. As for the rest of us, this is Matt Jensen, my brother, and my foreman Pearly. The young fellow who brought you in is Calvin Woods.
Yes, Calvin introduced himself to me. I am pleased to make the acquaintance of the rest of you grannies.
You're an unusual sort of fella, Dieter.
Oh, thank you. My apologies for trespassing on your range, Herr Jensen. I swear, I was not trying to rustle your cattle.
I believe you, and call me Smoke.
If you would like, Smoke, I will return to the wagons and inform the Baron that we are not allowed to travel through this area. The wagons may have already reached the boundaries of your range, but they can turn around and go back the way they came until we are able to circle around the hills.
Smoke?
There is no need for you folks to do that. That would just add more time to your trip, and it's already going to take you longer to get to Wyoming than it ought to. I don't mind you passing through, although it would have been nice if this Baron of yours would have looked me up and asked me about it first.
Dieter bowed again.
You are a true gentleman, Herr Jensen. I mean, Smoke.
You better be careful about that bowing, boy. You're going to throw your back out. Now, we don't hold much with it in these parts anyway. This is America, where folks don't have to bow to each other. Every man's as good as the next.
This is what I have heard, Mr. Preacher. Coming from the old country as I do, such a concept is difficult to grasp.
No, mister, just preacher.
You'll stay and have supper with us, won't you, Dieter?
I cannot. I must return to the wagons, report to the Baron, and assist in setting up camp. With your permission, of course, Smoke.
You got it. But I'm coming with you. I want to meet this Baron of yours.
So do I. Not sure I've ever met a Baron.
Yeah, well, I have. Ain't nothing special.
Does Baron von Hoffman have a family?
A cousin. She is his only close relative.
Smoke, I can hold off on getting supper ready for a while. If you're going out to the wagon train, why don't you ask the Baron and his cousin if they'll come and eat with us?
That's a good idea. You too, Dieter.
Oh, I could not.
Sure you can. Like Preacher told you, you're in America. We do things a mite differently here.
I understand that, but I'm not sure the Baron will.
One way to find out.
Smoke told Pearly and Cal to stay at the ranch headquarters. He and Dieter Schumann rode east from there, accompanied by Matt and Preacher.
Tell me more about this Baron von Hoffman.
The Baron is a fine man. I have never seen a more accomplished swordsman, or a better shot, or a more honorable gentleman. He served with valor and distinction in the army, and was wounded in the war against the French.
You know, I never could keep track of who was fighting who over yonder in the old country. Seemed like I'd go to St. Louis and hear about the news from far off about how some place was fighting some other place. And the next time I went, come to hear that those two bunches had thrown in together to fight against some other entirely different folks.
Allegiances do seem to shift quite a bit. Politics are very important in my homeland.
Politics. Bunch of vultures trying to feather their own nest, and devil take the hindmost from what I've seen of it. Most of them are partnered up with out-and-out crooks when that blasted engine ran.
I know nothing of this about which you speak.
It's not important right now. And all those European allegiances you were talking about don't matter anymore, Dieter. You're in America now. The country got started because people came here to lead new lives, and they're still doing that.
Yes, new lives.
For example, we don't have barons over here. Now that you're in America, you don't have to bow and scrape to this von Hoffman hombre.
My family has served the von Hoffman family for generations. It is the way of things.
It's the way things used to be. Not anymore. Sure, you can work for them if you want to. But if you don't, there's nothing stopping you from going and doing something else.
But what would I do?
Drive a stagecoach, prospect for gold, start your own ranch if you want to.
My own ranch? Oh, it is something to dream about. If only.
There are no if-onlys here. If you want it bad enough, you can do it.
Not this. Even if I had my own ranch, I would need something else to make it complete. Someone else.
The girl, eh? Does she know how you feel about her?
Oh, no. I could never tell her.
Why not?
Because she is not for the likes of me.
You're talking about someone of noble birth? And you can't approach her because you're just a common man?
That's right.
Well, let me tell you something, amigo. In this country, a man's only as common as he wants to be. If you want to be an uncommon man, what you've got to do is reach out and grab...
Ho, ho!
Whoa! Come on! As Smoke, Matt, Preacher, and Dieter galloped toward the sound of shots, Smoke caught a glimpse of white between the hills known as East and West Kiowa Peak.
Wagons, you think?
Looks like it to me. Come on.
The men all leaned forward in their saddles and pounded toward the hills at top speed. As they came closer, Smoke saw that his guess was right. A long line of several dozen wagons had entered the gap, and now the immigrants appeared to be pinned down by rifle fire from both hills. Smoke pointed to the eastern peak.
Matt, you and Preacher see if you can roust up some of the varmints on that side. Dieter and I will head west.
Got it.
Matt and the old mountain man veered their horses toward the east. Smoke angled west and looked over to make sure Dieter was coming with him. The young man urged his horse ahead, doing his best to keep up with Smoke. Dieter looked a little scared. Smoke figured this would be his first real gun battle.
Hell, Jensen, I am unarmed.
Can you handle a rifle?
I have shot a Winchester a few times.
Smoke pulled his rifle from the saddle boot and brought his horse close enough to Dieter's mount that he could pass the weapon over to the young man.
Here, it's got 15 rounds in it. Work the lever between shots.
Got it.
Smoke pulled slightly ahead again to lead the way. He'd circled far enough to the west that he and Dieter were able to start up the back side of the hill. Smoke's horse was fresher and took the slope easier. Dieter began to fall back. Smoke waved for the young man to follow him and kept going. As Smoke neared the top of the hill, he reined in. Smoke opted to go ahead on foot. His colt was in hand as soon as his boots hit the ground. There was a good chance the bushwhackers had left their horses somewhere up here in the trees, along with some men to keep an eye on the animals. Smoke did not want to blunder right into them, so he moved forward with caution. A racket in the brush behind him made Smoke look over his shoulder. Dieter had caught up. Now the young man was hastily stomping forward through the brush. Smoke motioned for him to slow down, take it easier and quieter. Dieter did so. His eyes were so big now, they looked like they were going to jump right out of their sockets. Smoke decided it might be better to wait for him, so he paused until Dieter came up and joined him at the hill's crest.
Stay with me. If you have to shoot, don't waste any time. But don't rush it either. Make sure the rifle's pointing at one of them and not me before you pull the trigger.
Javel, yes, Smoke. I understand. Who are these men?
No idea, but they're shooting at your wagon train. That's enough for me.
For me too. Let us ventilate some of the mangy polecats.
Yeah, we'll do that.
They began stalking down the slope. From the corner of his eye, Smoke spotted movement through the trees and underbrush. Motion for Dieter to follow him as he moved to the left. A moment later, Smoke saw the movement again, and he knew it to be several horses moving around nervously. He pointed out the animals to Dieter, who nodded.
There'll be at least two of the bushwhackers with the horses, maybe more. They won't expect anybody to be coming up behind them, so we ought to be able to get the drop on them. If they put up a fight, though, don't hesitate to shoot.
Oh, I won't, Herr Jensen. Smoke. I will do what I have to.
Well, that's all I can ask of any man. Come on.
On the far slope of the eastern hill, Matt and Preacher brought their horses to a halt.
Split up?
Yeah.
Good luck. Be careful, Preacher.
I got all the luck I need right here. Be careful, men die in their beds. Hell with that.
Drawing both guns, Preacher started off into the trees, heading down the hillside. A big fight like this was nothing new for the old-timer. When he first came west, the vast frontier was full of enemies. Kill one, a dozen more took his place. The Preacher was used to the odds being against him. He liked it that way, in fact. These gunmen today weren't all that much of a challenge, though. Guided by the continuing crack of rifle fire, he came up behind a man who knelt in some rocks, shooting at the wagons in the gap below. The Preacher holstered both colts and drew his bowie knife instead. The varmint never knew what hit him, as nearly a foot of cold, razor-sharp steel buried itself in his back. The deadly keen tip of the knife pierced his heart and killed him. The Preacher pulled the knife free, wiped the blood from the blade on the dead man's shirt, and began looking for new prey to stalk. He wasn't long in finding it. But there were two of the bushwhackers this time, using a pair of thick-trunked pines about 10 feet apart for cover. One man's Winchester ran dry, and he half turned to reload it. When he did, he saw the old man in buckskin standing there.
Avery!
He dropped the empty rifle and reached for his revolver. The other man whirled around in alarm and swung his rifle toward Preacher. Preacher's twin Colt blasted at the same instant. Both men collapsed, killed on the spot. That made three of the varmints done for. Preacher wondered idly how many more bushwhackers were on this hill. He hoped he wouldn't run out of them too soon. One worrisome thing was that the sun would be setting soon. And when it did, the shadows on this wooded hillside would grow thick in a hurry. That wouldn't bother Preacher. He had eyes like a cat. But it just might make things more difficult for Smoke and Matt. Preacher followed the sound of shooting until he came upon three more men clustered behind some trees. His Colts were in his hands, and he was about to open fire on them when they paused in their attack on the wagon train and started talking to each other.
Bis von Hoffmann tot ist und keine Drohung mehr darstellt.
Es reicht mit den Auseinandersetzungen. Wir müssen ohne zu zweifeln die Befehle von Klaus ausführen.
The words didn't really make any sense to Preacher, but he knew he'd heard some of that language before. It was German. There was a whole wagon train full of German folks down there. These varmints were shooting at him, and it looked to be no random ambush. Knowing that these bushwhackers weren't common everyday outlaws might come in handy later on, in case there was another attack on those immigrants. With that settled, Preacher stepped into the open.
Hey, you Dutch-talking varmints! Sprickin' some of this!
Shots rolled from his Colts. The men got off several shots in return. The broad-brimmed felt hat sailed off the old-timer's head. Another bullet plucked at the fringe on his sleeve. One of the bushwhackers finally crumpled under the leaden onslaught. Then another. And finally, Preacher drilled the last of the hombres in the forehead and saw him collapse like a puppet with its strings cut. Preacher pouched one of the irons and got busy reloading the other Colt. This was done mostly by feel, because he was keeping a close eye on the fallen gunman in case one or more of them was still alive. Unlike the other bushwhackers he had seen, these three were wearing town clothes, tweed suits, and bowler hats, which stood to reason. When both guns had full cylinders again, Preacher checked the bodies and made sure they were dead. One of the hombres was short and beefy, with a red face and clean-shaven jowls. The other two were taller and sported close-cropped beards. If these men were behind the attack on the wagon train, they could have paid the other men to bushwhack the immigrants. Preachers searched the bodies, found their wallets, and tucked them away inside his buckskin shirt. He would look over their contents later when he was back with Smoke and Matt. That done, Preacher started down the slope again, but he hadn't gone very far when he heard men moving through the undergrowth, hurrying up the hill. From the sound of it, they were giving up the ambush and lighting a shuck out of here. Preacher found himself a nice, sturdy tree and got ready. Both Colts had full cylinders, which meant he had 12 shots without reloading. And he intended to make good use of each and every one of them.
Bull's about to open and it is gonna be one hell of a fandango.
Eight men came up the hill toward Preacher.
We need to get back to the horses before it's dark.
Yeah, and after dark we can ride down into the gap and finish off the job. A lot of them are just women and kids, so they won't give us any trouble. And Klaus told us the men are nothing but farmers and shopkeepers. Nothing to worry about there either.
Preacher stepped out from behind the tree and pointed his guns at him.
Yeah, you can worry about me instead, you no-account snake.
As the men swung their rifles up, each of Preacher's guns roared twice. fired four shots, but cut down three of the men and wounded another. Preacher kept shooting. Bushwhackers were fighting back by now, and the storm of lead raged around his head, forcing Preacher to duck behind the tree again. Chunks of bark and splinters of pine flew in the air as slugs chewed into the trunk. Preacher thrust his right-hand gun around the tree and fired again. Then he weaved to the left and snapped a shot around that side. Another man went down, blood and brains leaking from the hole in his head. Yet another stumbled back and forth, clutching at his belly where one of Preacher's slugs had torn through his entrails. That left three of the bushwhackers on their feet, and they had thrown themselves behind trees too. By then, Preacher had emptied the chambers of both guns.
He's empty! Rush him before he can reload!
That would have been a bad mistake on their part if he'd had a spare gun, but he didn't. He still had his Bowie, though. Those old boys were about to think that they had cornered themselves a grizzly bear. But before that could happen, Matt burst out of the woods behind them.
Hey!
The bushwhackers spun toward him, but Matt's guns were already spitting fire and lead. The barrage of bullets knocked two of the men off their feet, but the third one was able to get his Winchester going and cranked off three swift shots. Matt dove to the side to avoid being ventilated. Preacher figured Matt would have taken care of the buzzard anyway, but there's no point in taking a chance. The old mountain man drew his Bowie knife from its fringed sheath as he stepped out from behind the tree. Preacher's arm flashed into motion and the knife flew across the intervening space. The Bowie's heavy blade was buried in the would-be killer's back. The man dropped his rifle and he pitched forward in a limp sprawl. After striding down the hill and retrieving his knife, Preacher rejoined Matt.
I would have gotten him in a second.
Oh, I know. I'm just saving you some bullets.
Are there any more of them around?
I don't hear no more shots coming from over there. You reckon we got them all?
Sounds like it. We better take a look around, though.
It didn't take long for him to confirm that all the men whose bodies were scattered around the slope were indeed dead. And they began moving quietly among the trees in search of more bushwhackers.
Suppose you left any of the ones you ran into alive, did you?
Wasn't time for that. How about you?
Well, I tried to take one of them prisoner, but he wasn't having any of it.
Yeah, I ain't surprised. All the ones I seen were hard cases. Low-down, hired gun wolves. Except for three of them.
What about those three?
Well, they were city fellas and foreigners at that. We spoke that Dutch jabber like young Dieter. And I heard one of those gunnies say something about a man called Cloud. Reckon he might have been the one who hired him to ambush the wagon train.
You think this Klaus was one of the men you killed?
I don't know, but I got their bona fides right here. We can have a look at them later once we're sure the fight's over.
Smoke's bound to be in the middle of that ruckus.
He usually is.
Smoke had heard the furious outbreak of shooting on East Kiowa Peak a few minutes earlier, and he felt confident that Matt and Preacher were the cause of most of it. Now, he and Dieter were outnumbered, though, huddling behind some rocks after several of the bushwhackers had spotted them and opened fire.
Have they broken off the attack on the wagon train?
Seems that way. They're coming after us now.
Well, good. At least they won't harm any more of my friends.
I'm sure that gal's all right, Dieter. She's probably forded up inside one of the wagons.
I pray it is so.
Let's get out of here, boys! Keep them holed up while we get the horses!
They're making a break for their horses.
You mean they're abandoning the attack?
Sounds that way to me. They just want us to keep our heads down until they can get away.
We must stop them!
Hold on. We've spooked them enough to make them scatter. Considering the odds, that's a pretty good job of work.
But we cannot allow them to get away! They may have killed some of the people with the wagons!
They probably did. But getting yourself killed won't change that.
Justice must be done!
That was an admirable goal, but Smoke was practical enough to know that it was not always possible. He and Dieter had killed several of the bushwhackers, and he figured Matt and Preacher had done the same for some of the others over on the eastern peak. That might have to count for settling the score in this case, at least until Smoke could figure out who was responsible for this ambush. Then, things might be different. Smoke raised up enough to empty his Colt in that direction. We figured he was just hurrying the bushwhackers on their way.
Oh, they're getting away!
Yeah, but now we can get down there to the wagons and see just how bad folks are hurt.
Yes, we must rattle our hawks.
They stood up and began climbing the hill, heading back toward the place where they had left their mounts. The horses were still there. Smoke and Dieter swung into their saddles and rode quickly down the far slope. When they reached the bottom of the hill, Smoke led the way around it toward the wagon train. The wagons hadn't moved, Smoke saw, as the big canvas-covered vehicles came into view. The wagons weren't the only thing he saw. He spotted two riders coming from the direction of the other hill.
Dieter, ride ahead and let your folks know that we're friends. They're probably pretty jumpy after going through that ambush. And if they see strangers coming in, they're liable to start shooting again. They ought to recognize you, though.
That's a good idea.
Dieter heeled his mount into a gallop and headed toward the wagons. Smoke lifted a hand to catch the attention of Matt and Preacher. He'd been pretty sure from the start that they were the two riders he saw, and as he came closer, he was able to confirm that. Relief went through him. It appeared that both of them were all right, although the sun was down now and the light was starting to fade, so Smoke couldn't be sure of that. They angled across the gap to rendezvous with him. Smoke reined in as they joined him.
Smoke, you hit?
Nope. A few slugs came close, but none of them tagged me. How about you two? Sounded like you had a real war going on over there.
That was mostly Preacher.
Oh, that boy's just peeved because I killed a heap more of those varmints than he did.
But we're both all right. How about Dieter?
He did just fine.
Smoke nodded toward the rider now coming toward him.
I sent him ahead to let the folks with the wagons know that we're friendly.
Good idea. Don't want a bunch of greenhorns getting trigger happy.
Dieter brought his horse to a stop, took off his high-crowned hat, and waved it over his head.
Herr Jensen, Smoke, come. You are welcome.
Smoke lifted a hand to acknowledge the invitation.
I reckon we get to go meet ourselves a baron.
Now that the danger seemed to be over, the immigrants had emerged from cover and were milling around the wagons. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher headed for the lead wagon, where Dieter had gone after waving them in. Dieter had dismounted and stood beside the wagon now, talking to a tall man and a woman with fair hair under a thrown-back sunbonnet. The tall man turned toward the three of them as they rode up. The baron carried himself with the stern, rigid bearing of a military man, an aristocrat, or both. Which, according to Dieter, Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann was.
Your Excellency, this is Herr Smoke Jensen, Herr Mats Jensen, and Herr Preacher. Gentlemen, His Excellency Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann.
Herr Jensen, young Schumann tells me that we owe you a considerable debt of gratitude. Without the assistance of you and your companions, those bushwhackers, as Schumann calls them, might have wiped us out.
We were glad to pitch in and lend you folks a hand.
Smoke shook hands with the Baron. Von Hoffmann turned to Matt and Preacher and shook hands with them as well. Then he gestured toward the young woman.
My cousin, Fräulein Erika von Hoffmann.
Ma'am, it's an honor.
Herr Jensen.
You lost some folks, didn't you?
Yeah. Three men, one woman, and one child. And perhaps a dozen more wounded, some of them seriously. Our casualties could have been much worse, but still, I regret every one. Schumann tells me that you killed some of the men who attacked us?
That's right. Maybe as many as 20 all told.
The four of you killed 20 men?
More or less. I reckon we can get a better count when we haul in the bodies tomorrow. The ones the scavengers haven't carried off by then anyway.
Mein Gott, this really is a violent land, isn't it?
It's a land that's whatever an hombre makes of it.
I assure you, I meant no offense, Herr Jensen. My own homeland has seen its share of spilled blood.
My ranch house isn't far from here. Dieter found you a good campground just ahead about half a mile. Why don't you get your wagons moving while you still have some light and you can make your camp up there? We'll show you the way. Then you and your cousin can come back to the house and have supper with us.
We are honored by the invitation. I should probably remain with my people, though, to make sure they are safe. The men who attacked us could return.
That's not very likely. But you can post some guards and I'll send some men over to help. Matt, how about you riding back to the ranch and telling Pearlie to send 4 men to the Snake Creek pasture?
I can do that. Fraulein von Hoffman, I'll see you back at the ranch.
Yes, of course, Herr Jensen. I look forward to it.
It took a while to get the wagons rolling. Everyone in the group was still scared and upset, especially those who had had loved ones killed or wounded. Some of the oxen had been killed, too. They had to be unhitched from their traces, the wagons moved, and other oxen from the small herd being driven along with the wagon train hitched up in their places. With all of that to take care of, dusk was settling down pretty thickly over the landscape by the time the wagon train reached the broad open pasture next to the creek. At least the immigrants had plenty of experience pulling the wagons into a circle and setting up camp. They went about those chores efficiently, although an air of stunned sorrow still hung over the entire group. While that was going on, Pearlie arrived with 3 of the ranch hands, all of them well-armed.
Matt told me you wanted me to send over 4 men, but I figured I'd come myself. I'll take charge of setting up guard shifts and make sure there's a good man on each of them.
Thanks, Pearlie. These folks have been through a lot today. They'll need somebody giving them a hand.
We'll take good care of them. Don't worry about that.
Smoke took Pearlie over to von Hoffman.
Baron, this is my foreman, Pearlie. He'll see to it that the camp is well guarded.
A pleasure to meet you. My thanks.
We can head to the ranch house now.
As soon as I freshen up and change.
We don't stand on ceremony out here, Baron. You're fine, just the way you are.
Oh, with the smell of gunpowder clinging to my clothes? But then the smell is quite common on the frontier, isn't it?
I'd worry more about what my wife will say if the food she fixed gets too cold.
Frau Jensen does not even know that guests are coming, does she? Won't she be upset?
Not Sally. It takes a lot to throw her for a loop. Anyway, it was her idea. So, in fact, she's expecting you. Come on, Dieter. You're invited, too.
Oh, no, I could not.
Oh, sure you could.
If it wasn't for your bringing Matt, Preacher, and me back here, that ambush might have turned out even worse than it did.
Yes, you should come along. We're all in your debt, aren't we, Friedrich?
Of course. Come with us, Schumann.
Oh, thank you, Your Excellency. And thank you, too, Herr Jensen.
Smoke, remember? Get your horse and let's go. Can you handle a saddle mount?
Of course. I went riding often on Friedrich's estate. I quite enjoy it.
Smoke couldn't help but wonder why von Hoffman had come to America in the first place and brought all these folks with him. The man had a title and a estate and evidently plenty of money if he'd been able to afford to outfit this wagon train and buy a ranch in Wyoming. Why leave all that behind and come all this way to a new country? Maybe it had something to do with today's attack on the wagon train. It wasn't really any of his business, but Smoke was still curious. And in a way, it was his business. These pilgrims were on Sugarloaf Range, and von Hoffman and Erica would soon be sitting down at his table. That made them his guests, all of them. Smoke didn't cotton to somebody trying to murder his guests, so even though von Hoffman might refuse to talk about it, Smoke was going to try to find out what was going on here. Maybe there was something he could do to help. It was full dark by the time the group of riders came up to the Sugarloaf Ranch house, but that didn't matter. Smoke knew every foot of his range, and he had no trouble leading the others back to his home. Sally heard the horses coming, as he'd expected she would. She stepped into the doorway. Matt sat in one of the chairs on the porch. He had it tipped back, and one booted foot rested on the porch railing to balance him. Cal stood in the open door of the bunkhouse. His shoulder leaned against the jamb in a casual pose. But it was all a pose, Smoke knew. Until they were sure everything was still all right, they'd be watchful, alert for trouble. That sort of caution was ingrained in all of them. When Sally saw Smoke, a smile of welcome spread across her lovely face. She wouldn't have to reach for the Winchester that was just inside the door after all.